by Yosef and Chaim book, as well as Rachel and Morty book, in memory of Chaim Morty's father, Rabbi Henry book, Shechat Shabbat Uvracha, Rav Hanach, and Rav Binyamin Halevi. Well, welcome, Rabbi Weinreb.
Okay, thank you very much for the introduction. The one missing piece is that, and the important missing piece is that Chaim and Mordechai are my nephews, I should say. Yosef and Rachel are my nieces, and this lecture is being sponsored by them in memory of their father, of my dear brother-in-law, Henry Book, Olav HaSholem. And I was asked to speak about insights to the Haggadah, and of course this is a vast, vast topic. So I'm going to focus on some of the themes in the Haggadah, not necessarily in the text of the Haggadah, but about the whole concept of the Haggadah, so Pesach and the Seder, themes that reflect different aspects of my brother-in-law's personality. So it won't be a hesped, it's the month of Nisan, you don't make hespedim, but I think he would especially enjoy some of these thoughts because they would ring true to themes in his own life. I'm going to begin with a vort. It's not even a vort, it's kind of a way of greeting in Yiddish. Usually several weeks ago before Purim, with Pesach coming, in Yiddish if you see somebody you'd say Freilich in Purim und a kosher in Pesach. You would say it that Purim should be a happy Purim and Pesach should be a kosher in Pesach. One of my wife's ancestors was the great Hasidic sage, Rabbi Cheskel of Kuzmir. Cheskel of Kuzmir was a Talmud of the Chozer of Lublin, middle 19th century in Poland. And interestingly enough, he said, when he would wish people before Purim, before Pesach, instead of saying, Afreilich in Purim, and Akosher in Pesach, he would say, Akosher in Purim und Afreilich in Pesach. Purim should be kosher and Pesach should be freilich. And what he meant was Purim, as he would put it, Purim will definitely be freilich. Purim will be happy. People will get a little tipsy, there'll be a suda, there'll be a lebedek, it'll be lively, kids will get all dressed up in costumes. It's going to be freilich, it's going to be happy. But you've got to be sure is that it's going to be kosher, that you'll drink with moderation, that you'll act properly, that you won't just go wild and act in an abandoned way, that you'll be polite and courteous in the midst of all the hefkedikheit, in the midst of all the chaos of Purim. Pesach, on the other hand, he said, it's going to be kosher. Believe me, it's going to be kosher. Because every housewife is going to put into effect every chumrah she ever saw by her bubby. And they're going to remove the refrigerator to get to the crumbs that might be behind it. And people are going to be makbid on what kind of matzah they get, and what kind of wine they get, and what kind of products they get, and they're going to check the sherim this way and that way and everything. It's going to be kosher, that's for sure. What you have to be careful about is that it should also be freilach. That Pesach should also be happy. Because sometimes, in the midst of all the tension of cleaning and preparing and cooking and making sure everything is just so, there's such an atmosphere of tension that you lose the whole idea, which is you're supposed to be freilach. It's a yom tov and you're supposed to be happy. So this notion that sometimes we lose our priorities and get so caught up in the details which lead to tension, and so much miss the inner spirit of what we're supposed to be doing, this is a very, very important theme. It was a theme in my brother-in-law's life, but it's a theme that's important to all of us. Priorities and doing what's necessary to keep to the spirit of Yom Tov and the spirit of the Torah and not get distracted by things which are important, but in a certain sense secondary. I'd like to illustrate this idea with a few examples. Every year, I try to choose two Haggadahs. One old Haggadah that I choose to return to. This year I chose to return to the Netziv's Haggadah, Imre Shefer. I always look for a new Haggadah. And this came out maybe 2 years ago now, but for me it's new. It's the Haggadah of Rav Sholem. The Haggadah of Rav Sholem Shvadron, known as the Maggid of Yerushalayim. I have this picture here, which happens to be an excellent picture of him. It's a person who I was privileged to hear personally numerous times. In fact, I once heard Rav Shvadron many, many, many years ago, actually in the Sukkot immediately after the Six-Day War, when I was privileged to have some protection from an old man, Yerushalayim, who took me on the first night of Yom Tov to a small shtibble in Shari Chesed, where Rav Shvadron gave musa to such people as, who were then alive, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Bezalel Zulti, and all the other Rabbonei Vatikei Yerushalayim, and they wanted to hear some musa, and they asked him to give musa. So I was privileged to hear him many times. And in the preface to his Haggadah Shel Pesach, the editor wants to give you some sense of who this man was, so that as you get into the Haggadah itself and learn some of the things that he said, you'll appreciate something about the person who said it. And there's one story here that comes along with a Torah of his, which is very precious and illustrates our theme. Many of us are makpid to eat, make sure that we eat the afikoman before chatzos. There's a reason for it, halachic reasons for why you want to finish the afikoman before chatzos. Some people are more strict about it, some less. Rav Shvadron was extremely strict about it. And everyone knew by his seder, no matter what, they would finish the afikoman before chatzos. Rav Shvadron traveled across the world for various inyonei haklal, and once he was stuck in London for Pesach and couldn't go home to Yerushalayim. He lived in Yerushalayim in Shari Chesed, and he was glad that one of the balabatim in London invited him to come for Pesach, to come for Yom Tov, to have the seder with his family. Now you imagine this balabos, the new Rav Shvadron, very special Jew, was there for Pesach, and he knew that Rav Shvadron had his hakpodos, had his various concerns in halacha, and he knew that one of them was to finish the seder, at least finish the afikoman before midnight. This man in the household, he was married, he had children, but he also had an aged mother who was an almona. His father had died, and his mother pretty much ran the show. She was still active enough to be involved in the cooking and preparing for the Seder. And his wife, the daughter-in-law, worked along with her, and they were children. And when the Seder started, it was Motzoi Shabbos. It was Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. So the first Seder, the Seder, was Motzoi Shabbos, which meant later even than usual is when they finally got started. And the balabos was rushing his mother, his wife, and the kids to get through the Seder. The kids, what they all came, as all kids do, with their notes in school, and each one had their Torah, and Torah to say, and he kept telling the kids, no, hurry up, etc. Because he wanted to finish before Chatzos for Rav Shvadron. Rav Shvadron was sitting there, and he turned to the children and said, no, I want to hear everything you learned in school. And he got involved into a schmooze with the aged mother, grandmother. And he complimented the wife on every little thing that was on the table, how beautiful it all was, etc., etc. During the meal, he complimented her cooking. Ah, the fish was wonderful, the soup was great. And of course, the clock was ticking and it was getting later and later. And soon, the Baal HaBos saw there was no way they were going to be able to eat the Afikoman before Chatzos. So he turned to Rosh Chadron and said, I must ask you a question. I am really in a rush here. I know you are one of the Gedolei HaRabbonim of our door. Rosh Chadron was the brother-in-law of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rosh Chadron was the grandson of the Maharsham, Maharshan Arov, who was the great posek in the early 1900s, after whom he's named. Maharsham, Shlomo Mordechai is his name. So he said, I know that you are makpid to eat the Afikoman before Chatzos. That's why I was rushing. I rushed my mother, I rushed my wife, I rushed the kids. But I see you're sabotaging me. It seems like you're almost stalling. Well, I don't understand what's going on. Rav Sharon explained to him, look, to eat the Afikoman before Chatzos, there are various opinions. Even those who say you must eat it before Chatzos will grant you that it's midrabbonon, it's not min haTorah, it's not the Korban Pesach. It's midrabbonon, rabbinic law. However, making sure that an almona, a widow, doesn't feel bad, that's not a drabbonon. That's a d'oraisa, right? You have to make sure that you don't mistreat an almona. Shalom bayis between husband and wife, that's a d'oraisa. Being mechanech your children, chinuch, vishinantam levanecha, that's a d'oraisa. So all of these d'oraisas easily outweigh the drabbonon. And I saw that the best thing I could do here is to make sure that your mother and your wife hear the little kids say their Torah slowly and get nachas from each kid. That mitzvah is for sure the daraisa. And in the scheme of priorities, that takes precedence way over my hakpoda, my specific hidur, to finish the afikomen before Chatzos. This is extremely important. It's important in general in Jewish life to get our priorities straight and our priorities between mitzvos. But it's especially important to realize that very often the priorities are things between person and person. Ben odom l'chaveru, treating an almona, treating a spouse, encouraging children, and that they take priority in almost every instance over those things which are ben odom l'makom, eating the afikomen before chatzos. It's extremely important. Rav Chadron would explain his conduct at that seder in terms of a pasuk which is familiar to us in Tehillim. Lo bigvuras hasus yechpots, v'lo v'shoke ho ish yirtse. Right, God does not want the strength of the horse. He is not interested in the muscular thighs of men. Rotzei Hashem es yireyof, as Samyachlam Lachazda. God wants those people who fear him and who put their faith in his chesed. So Shadron asked the question. When you want to contrast two things, you contrast things which are at least in the same ballpark. You don't say, you know, I don't want poison, I want this delicacy. You know, you don't say that. You say, I don't want stam food, I want the delicacy. How can David HaMelech and Tehillim say, from one extreme to the other, God doesn't want mighty horses and muscular athletes, he wants Yireyov, Yirei Hashem. Yirei Hashem, that's a high madrega. Should say, God doesn't want a person who's a hypocrite, God doesn't want a person who's an amoret, God doesn't want a person who's whatever, he wants Yireyov. But to say he doesn't want the horse and the athlete, but he wants the Yireyim, it makes no sense to Rav Chadron. Rav Chadron says, Lo vivuras hasus yechpots. When you say God doesn't want the horse, it doesn't mean he doesn't want the horse in the last race in Belmont, or from my Baltimore friends, the last race in Pimlico. That's not what sus means here. Sus here is referring to a person who does mitzvahs. A horse is a symbol for a person who does mitzvahs. So Rav Chadron would say, yes, There are many people who do mitzvahs, and the process of doing a mitzvah, they trample on others. Lo v'gvuras hasus yechpos. God doesn't want to see people who do mitzvahs like a horse, trampling on other people. Lo v'shokei ho ish yirtza. He doesn't want somebody who has muscular legs, meaning he does mitzvahs, but in the process he kicks other people around, steps all over them. Rotza Hashem es yireyof. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants those yireyim who, when they do a mitzvah, do not in the process interfere with other people. Do not in the process step all over people, other people. Efam yachalim lechazdav. God wants people who understand that his lesson is chesed. That the chesed is more important sometimes than the mitzvah. It's a very powerful, very, very powerful word. I began with this little statement of Rabbi Yecheskel of Kuzmir, the great Hasidic Rebbe, that what we want is not only a kosher in Pesach, but a freilich in Pesach. A Pesach where we don't get carried away by what's kosher, but we have it to be freilich. And especially freilich between the people who are sitting around the Seder. So I'd like to continue with another idea from the same Rebbe, from Rabbi Yecheskel of Kuzmir, which takes us away from Pesach and back to a parsha we learned some time ago now, Parshas Miketz. And this is a beautiful, precious Hasidisha question and a very powerful Hasidisha answer. When Yosef finally told his brothers, didn't yet tell them who he was, but he sat them all down, he arranged them by age around the table, and he treated them to a seuda, to a meal. So the pasuk says, "Vayishtu, vayishkiru imo." They drank, and they became imbibed. They drank with him. So Rashi says, "Vayishtu, vayishkiru imo." They had a seuda. By your suda, you drink. What's the pasuk telling us? Rashi says, "Miyom shemachruhu lo shasu yayin." From the day that the brothers sold Yosef into slavery, they did not drink wine. "Velohu shasu yayin," and Yosef also refrained from wine. So both of them, all of them, had refrained from wine for a long period of time. But says Rashi, "V'oso hayom shosu." That day, they drank wine together. So he brought in the name of the Cheskel of Kuzmir, that he was sitting around a table with other great Hasidic Rebbes on Parshas Miketz. And the question came up, I understand why Yosef was now ready to break his 20-some year abstention from wine. After all, he knew now that these were his brothers, he was reunited, so he didn't have to refrain from wine any longer. But the brothers, they didn't know yet that this was Yosef. So why did they drink wine? If they had abstained from wine all these years, out of the pain of being separated from their brother, not knowing what happened to their brother Yosef, around this table they still didn't know that this man was Yosef. What were they doing drinking wine? So around the table was a great Rebbe, Rav Nosson Dovich of Shidlovtze, and he said he had heard this question in the name of Rabbeinu of Radishitz, I'm reading from the text, who said, jokingly, in Yiddish, "Der v'skit zu trinken is a bruder." A person who gives you a drink, he's your brother. So he's your brother, you drink. But Rav Yecheskel of Kuzmir said, no, I have a different and much deeper understanding. And that is, Av sheyesh lo la'odom eze hanhogos u'gedorim musyogim. There are various people who have chumras, special hanhogos, special hakpodos. Many of us, even if we're not great, pious people, are careful in certain things, that we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that, we're going to refrain. We're going to refrain from perhaps some certain type of ma'acholim. Perhaps we're going to refrain from certain activities which are not proper, but they're not usur, but we're going to have our own personal hanhogos. That's wonderful. But suppose we're in the company of somebody who does not have these hanhogos, who does not have these chumras. So then, writes the Cheskel and Kuzmir, Omnom, כשיזדמן יחד עם חוסד עובד השם, יניח ויעזוב ההנהוגוס והגדורים שלו בשביל לשמוח יחד עמו. If you're sitting around a table with somebody who is a wonderful person, a kosher yid, but he doesn't have these chumras that you have adapted for yourself. And the important thing is to sit with this yid and to eat and drink with him and to be besimcha and to drop your personal hanhogos. He goes on to say, for example, the marshal, im hu noheg lehis palel mu'ucha. He's a Hasidic yid. He davens always very late in the morning. All right. And now he has an opportunity to have breakfast with a friend who davens early. All right. So that morning, yispalel baboker. You get up early and make sure you don't keep to your extra Hasidic hanhoga. You do something different, and you make sure you have the opportunity lismoach yachad, to be besimcha together. V'im hu mugdar shelo le'echol ma'achol zeh, or shelo lishtos mashkazo u'chadome. If you have an ha'aga, I don't eat this particular type of food. I don't drink this particular type of drink. But now you have the opportunity to sit around a table with this person, to be misameach with him. Ya'azov gidro. Leave aside your geder, leave aside your gedorim, leave aside your extra chumras. Ve'achov, ve'lishtos, ve'lismoach, yachad. To be able to sit and eat and drink and be happy together. It's a very powerful, powerful point. You have chumras, but in the interest of the simcha, of getting together with a friend, you put the chumras aside. And he continues back to the story. When Yosef HaTzadik was sitting around with all the Shvatim, and the Shvatim did not yet know that he was Yosef HaTzadik, but they knew that he was something special. They saw Shem Shemayim Shogor B'Fiv, he was being Machnis Oreach. They saw that he was something special. So it was an opportunity to be together with the special person, drop your chumras. And therefore the chumras that they had accepted upon themselves of not drinking wine all these years, they put that aside, and as the Pasuk says, Vayishtu, Vayishkaru, Ima. So again, it's an extremely powerful kind of teaching, that sometimes you put aside your chumras. Whether the chumras are in Pesach around the Seder table, or chumras in general, in order to give priority to, in the case of the before us, to brotherhood, even though you don't know yet it's your brother. Well, in the case of Bar Shvadron, to give priority to the Kibud Avoheim, to give priority to the Almona, and to suspend whatever chumras you might have. In case you think that this is all very interesting, Musar, Hashkofa perhaps, but what relevance does it have lahalocha? So I want to quote to you from the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah is not in Hilchos Pesach, it's in Hilchos Shabbos, the Siman Reish Ayin Aleph, the dinim of Kiddush al Hayayim. The Mechaber begins the chapter about Kiddush on Friday night. Kishiyavo leveso yemaher le'echol miyad. Person comes home, he should immediately begin the Seuda. The Mishnah Berurah says that means lekadosh, not to eat, but to make Kiddush. However, he says, there's an inyan that if a person is not hungry, it's Friday night, he's not hungry, so many have the chumra of being mamtin, of waiting until they're hungry, so that they should eat the suda with a little extra appetite. However, these are the words of the Mishnah Berurah. Umikol makom nira, it appears to me, teheicha deyesh bazeh mishum shalom bayis. Suppose the father has some chumra, but which, by which he wants to make kiddush a little later. What Shalom Bayit's considerations say, make it earlier. Oshi Yeshlo Beveso Mishorsen. Forget Shalom Bayit, your wife. But you have servants, Jewish servants, in your home, and they're hungry, and they want to make Kiddush earlier. Oshi Ororchen. Well, you have guests. Ubefrat Oreach Oni. Especially a guest who's a poor person. Lo Ya'acher B'chol Gavni. So you don't conduct yourself according to your chumras to make Kiddush later. The cave on the hemu tolem alov, lo yuchal li akfam, b'shvil shehuro tzelekaye mitzvah min hamufchor. Because you want to be a grosh tzaddik, and you want to do a mitzvah min hamufchor, you want to accept upon yourself a chumra, fine. But not if that chumra is going to interfere with someone else. Especially not if it's your wife, but even if it's a guest, servants, whatever. Shehudot l'kaya mitzvah min hamufcha is not a reason to insist upon your chumras. We all know, and of course this is connected, if indirectly, to the Seder, to one of the stories in the Seder, and that is the story about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. You know, ben Azariah said, Harayani, Kiven Shivim Shana, etc. And most of us know the story behind the story. The story behind the story is accounted, recounted in the Sefer Brachos, in the Chos Rayim. The Gemara tells the story. They were promoted, they brought down from his position of Nasi, Rabban Gamliel. They were looking for a successor to Rabban Gamliel. They looked at Rabbi Akiva, looked at Rabbi Tarfon, looked at Yeshua. Everybody had something which disqualified him from being the new Nasi. Then they saw Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who would happen to have been the youngest of the group, and they wanted him to become the Nasi. So what was his response? I've got to go home and ask my wife. Alright? I've got to go home and ask my wife. Gemara Tzayas, one of the commentaries in the back of the Gemara, raises this question for Derech Remes. I saw the question asked more powerfully even in other sphere. Man's given the opportunity to become the Nasi Yisroel. Obviously, this is a tremendous mitzvah to take on Jewish leadership at a time in Jewish history when Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Tarfon are looking for a new leader. All right? And these people are willing to crown you the leader. So obviously they're telling you, Mr. Elazar ben Azariah, you have the obligation to take upon the mantle of leadership. The time in history is an extremely sensitive time. This is not a peaceful time. There are threats from within and threats from without to the Jewish people. And you're given this assignment. So you're going to say, excuse me, I've got to go home and ask my wife. Besides which, Chazal say that Hashomei Aliatzas Ishto, the person always listens to his wife, it's not so good. But so what's he doing looking for his wife's consent? Maratzayas quotes from the name of the Rebbe of Yonason of Yaris Tavash, a teretz, which is a halachic teretz, but the meaning behind it is that this man was about to undertake a position which would mean a radical change in his lifestyle. He would no longer be just the Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah who was sitting in the Beis Medrash, who was learning, who had whatever panosa he had that his wife was accustomed to. He was about to accept upon himself a position which, yes, all the Jewish people would gain from the position. But his wife would have to change her way of life, perhaps lower her standard of living, perhaps raise her standard of living. She would have to be entertained guests. She would have to have a different type of household. She wouldn't have as much time as before. She would have to go to social functions, whatever would happen to be. So the decision, as important as it was something that impinged upon somebody else. In this case, impinged upon his wife. He had to say, I must go first and ask her about it. So it's not only a chumra that we're willing to suspend in the interests of Shalom Bayis, in the interests of considering the feelings of another. But it's even when a person is given an opportunity and a challenge and a mission by the Gedolei Olam. Nevertheless, his first consideration has to be, how is this going to affect those people around me. Same idea as Rav Shlagron at that Seder. I'm not concerned about finishing the Afikom before Chatzos. I'm concerned about how that's going to affect people around me. My father-in-law, Zichron Levrach, who passed away a year and a half ago, studied in the Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, in Lublin. And when he was there, it was already after Rav Meir Shapiro had died, the late 1930s. And the Hanhola, the administration of the Yeshiva, in order to fill in the tremendous vacuum that was created by the death, the sudden death, the tragic death of Rav Meir Shapiro, who was a young man in his 40s when he died, they brought in various other great, great individuals. They brought in the Kozhik Lavrov, who was a great posek, the Talmud Avnei Nezer, so he was kind of the Rosh Yeshiva. He said the Shir, the Beis Medrash. They also brought in someone to be what we would call today, they didn't use that term in that Yeshiva, a Mashkiach Ruchoni. And his name was Shimon of Zelichov, and everyone knew him as Shimela. They didn't call him Reb Shimela. Shimela Zelichov. And he, you talk to any, there are very few survivors now of that Tekufa, but there are still some, Rav Vozner, others, who tell all sorts of stories about Shimela Zelichov. And this is one that's told over by Rav Vozner. And he was in Adria, he was there at the time. He was a guest at the Seder table of this Shimela Zelichov. And another guest was an old man, Chosher man, long beard, not a Rav, not a Rebbe, but a Chosher Yid, sitting at the table. Came time for the first Kazayas Matzah. And the old man had no teeth. He couldn't chew. So Shimon Zelichov said to him, "No, take the matzah, this hot soup on the table, dip the matzah into the hot soup, and eat it that way. No, dip the matzah into the hot soup, it's gebrot, alright, and there's a chumrah, and believe me, it's a hard chumrah to understand, but it's a chumrah that's accepted nowadays by people who don't even keep the Shulchan Aruch, but they keep the chumrah. Alright, you're not allowed to eat gebrot. Not allowed to eat gebrot. But here these people were Hasidic Yidden, Polish Yidden. I mean, for them, eating gebrot, they kept all the other, they kept the Shulchan Aruch and all the other chumras. This person wasn't about to even follow Rav Shimla Zelichova and eat the matzah dipped into the roitov, dipped into the soup. So Rav Vozner writes that he remembers these words, Mila b'mila, and these are the words that Rav Shimla Zelichova said to this old man. Rav Yid, ihr brockt euch ein und esst. My fellow Jew, brockt, dip the matzah into the soup and eat. Ob ihr wilt nicht, if you don't want to, ihr hot meure, because you're afraid, gebrockt, well, ich mit euch mit essen, das gebrockte. I'll also eat the kazayas matzah, gebrockte head, with dipped into the soup. Doesn't tell you the end of the story. I always wondered, did the man listen? Did Shimla Zelichova also dip? We don't know. But if Shimla Zelichova was willing to do that because it's pashut. Halakhically it's pashut. Because achilas matzah, first seder, is a barav tochlu matzah, mitzvah seder raisa. Eating gebrot is a very far-fetched chumrah. But here the lesson is deeper than that. That Rav Shimon Zelichova, in the interest of another Jew, being able to be Mekayim the mitzvah, and having the feeling of having eaten the Kazayas mitzvah, and having the feeling of not having violated the chumrah, which he probably kept for 80 years, as an old man, of not eating gebrot, he was willing to eat along with him, the gebrot. I want to take this occasion to mention something along these lines of gebrot, from my Zayda, who was Chaim and Mordechai's great-grandfather. My father's father, Chaim Yitzchak Weinberg, was a student of the Maharsham, Shalom Shvadron is a grandchild of the Marsham. My grandfather, our grandfather, was a student of his. And a big Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, who learned to say that all of his life, Shas, Poskim, day in and day out, and he died over a Gemara. My aunt found him in the morning, his head down on the Gemara. That's how he was found. And it was a Hasidish Yid, a Chartkever Chassid, who came to America at the advice of the Chartkever Rebbe. And he was a Hasidish Yid. I mean, he learned Hasidish for him. And growing up, I never knew that Hasidim didn't eat gebrot. I never knew that Hasidim didn't eat in the sukkah, didn't make kiddush in the sukkah, didn't eat in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. I didn't know these things. I didn't know that Hasidim didn't keep the Zman Tefillah, certain groups of Hasidim. Because when he came to America, and he raised his children, all of his children in America, he said to himself and to his family, and at one point told me this, if I'm going to raise children in America in the 1920s and tell them, your Shulchan Aruch says, yeah, you're supposed to eat in the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres, you just don't make the bracha. But we don't do it. Because by in the name of Manishkata, that's a kula. Or if I'm going to tell them a chumra, all right, which is not in the Shulchan Aruch, the brach. So then they're going to say, Hilchas Shabbos? In the haim, we didn't do it. They'll find all kinds of kulas and chumras. So if I'm going to raise a family here, in this country, under the conditions that he raised them in an upstate New York town, then I'm putting aside all of the Hasidish chumras and kulas, and I'm just teaching them to live the life by the Shulchan Aruch. I remember then, I was a young boy when he told me this, so I said to him, Zayda, so why do you wear a gartel? Because I thought, in my ignorance, that a gartel was a Hasidish chumra. So we took out a Shulchan Aruch and showed me where it says in the Shulchan Aruch you're supposed to wear a gartel. So as he put it then, the kashi is a zay, nishvay funz. The question is on those mismagdim, not on those Hasidim. But this was his way. But the point of the story of Abshimel Zelichov, of course, is that a chumra, Hasidish chumra, Misnagdish chumra, any chumra, falls by the wayside when there are much more important considerations, such as in this case, the mitzvah of matzah, and making a person feel that he was not doing anything wrong by eating the matzah dipped into the soup. So this, again, is a theme that was very much a theme of Chaim and Mordechai's father, of Henry Oliver Sholem's life. The priorities of Yiddishkeit, having the priorities right, and realizing that sometimes you must put away chumras, hanhogis, or stam shtick, because there are much more important considerations, and those important considerations usually are the feelings of an almona, the feelings of one's spouse, the feelings of one's children, the feeling of an old guest, etc. But there's another theme in my brother-in-law's life that's much more important. And that is the theme of simcha. Many times I've heard a nephew say this, and I've said it, it's very hard to close your eyes now 2 years after he passed away and to try to get into your mind's eye an image of him and not see him smiling. Very hard to do. There's times he got angry, times he got upset, times he was sad. But his characteristic face was Sefer Ponim Yochos, was a smart. So I want to say something about Simcha at the Seder. I'm not talking about the mitzvah of Simcha Shyantav in the halakhic sense. But Simcha, having the Seder with joy. Again, referring back to that first vort. Making sure that it's not just our kosher of Pesach, but a freilich in Pesach. The Seder has to be freilich. The Seder has to be besimcha. And I want to share with you some thoughts about this theme of simcha at the Seder. We all know there's a mitzvah every day of the year. Pesach, Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av, Stam Tuesday in the middle of Teves, of Zuchiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. A Jew must mention Yitzias Mitzrayim twice a day, in the morning and at night. There's also a mitzvah, Mirat Hashem, this coming Monday night, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's the difference between this everyday mitzvah, Daven Meir tonight, you're already Mekayim it, of mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim every night of the year, versus Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim at the Haggadah Shel Pesach? There are numerous approaches to this. Soloveitchik has a whole approach to this. There are many, many approaches to it. However, I want to share with you one which is presented by the Chido, Chaim Yosef David Azulai, the great Star Dirov in the 1700s. And his diuk is a fascinating one. We all know, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Chayav Odom Liros Es Asmo Ki'ilu Hu Yotzo Mitzrayim. Person must always see himself as if he has just come out of Mitzrayim. We also know, many of us know, that when the Rambam brings down this particular halacha, he doesn't write Chayav Odom Liros Es Asmo, a person must see himself as if he came from Mitzrayim, but rather Chayav Odom Laharos Es Asmo. A person must present himself, must perform, must act, must show himself as if he just came from Mitzrayim. How do you show yourself? So Poshup Shat, by your whole demeanor, by the way you're reclining, by the mitzvah of Haseba, you're wearing a kittel, everything you do shows to other people that you're experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the Chidah says that Chayav Odom Laharos Es Atzmo Shehabein Yireh Simchas Oviv. Simchas Oviv. The son observes how happy his father is. The son sits at the table and sees how happy the father is. That's how the father fulfills the inyan of Laharos Es Atzmo. The father demonstrates through his simcha. The Chidah goes on to say, and this, in his opinion, is the difference between Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on Leil Pesach and Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim all the other days of the year. On a plane, Sunday night like tonight is, in the middle of Nisan, there's a mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we do so incorporated in our Tfilah of Meirov. But there's no mitzvah of Simcha. You don't have to say it to Simcha any more than you have to do any mitzvah to Simcha. You mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, and you do that every night of the year. On the Leil Seder, the Leil is Kadesh Chag, then the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is done b'simcha. It's a Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim which is done in a manner where the mood of simcha is contagious, so that it's laharos et atzmo. You're showing the simcha, you're demonstrating the simcha. This is an approach by the Chidah. There's an overwhelmingly useful but very hard to study relatively new edition of the Haggadah Shel Pesach, which is put out by the Moshe HaRav Kook, part of the same series of Torah Chaim. So you have on Chumash, with all the various Rishonim on the page. Rashi and Ramban for sure, the Sforno, the Cheskuni, and Ibn Ezra, and Sagigon, etc., etc. So they're doing that now for various other things, like on Pirkei Avos now they have all the Rishonim on Pirkei Avos on the page, so you can have three words, and then six pages of Rishonim, Rishonim, Rishonim. They did it for Megillas Esther, and they have it for the Haggadah Shel Pesach. So it's a wonderful thing to have, but it's overwhelming. You know, and on one page, you can have 20 different Rishonim, what they say. To me, I find that overwhelming. So what I do is I pick one Rishon, I ask Mechila from all the others, and I go through it without one Rishon. You know, at least I get a consistent approach. So the Rishon I chose this year is the Ritva. The Ritva writes, Filu kolonu chachomim, kolonu vonim, etc. Mitzvah leinu l'saper b'yetzias Mitzrayim. The Ritva says, l'saper b'simcha yetzias Mitzrayim. Now this is a Rishon. Rishon throws in the word b'simcha. It's not poshut. It's something special. Alright, so that's a diuk in the language of the Ritva. But one of the good things about all this forum lately, when I studied Ritva and Yeshiva, the Ritva came without footnotes, without punctuation, without paragraphs. Right. Now, you know, it's a whole new world. So the footnotes, whoever made the footnotes on the Ritva, says an interesting thing. He asked the question, how does the Ritva know that mitzvah alenu l'sapeh b'yitzias Mitzrayim is mitzvah alenu l'sapeh b'simcha yitzias Mitzrayim. So the footnote says it's in the pasuk. It's the pasuk in Yeshaya. Most of the pasuk is familiar to anybody who learns Torah. Hashir yihye lochem kaleil hischadeshchak. It's a pasuk. The shir should be to you like the leil hischadeshchak. That's chag at Pesach, the night that Pesach is begins. That pasuk, a beautiful pasuk. There's two more words to that pasuk. Hashir yihye lochem kaleil hischadeshchak b'simchas levov. Look up the pasuk. It's Yeshaya, Perek Lamed, pasuk Chof Tes. This pasuk, which is one of these psukim, you know, that every yeshiva boy who didn't learn Tanakh knows from the Gemara, Hashir yihye lochem kaleil hischadeshchak, but very few of us know the rest of the pasuk, which says the words b'simchas levov. That leil hischadeshchak requires a certain dimension of simcha as well as everything else. There's a sefer out there called Imre Shammai. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a very interesting sefer. This Rav Shammai, I forget his second name, is a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He's still alive today. So he has an interesting question in his Haggadah. And the question is, the Haggadah Shel Pesach says that the Rabbanim, the Eliezer, the Tarfim, the Kiva, was a Nazariah, was sitting around the student of Bnei Brak, and they hold you misafram b'yitzias Mitzrayim koloso halaylo ad shebo talmideyem, until finally the talmidim came in. They said, Rav Hoseinu, higi azman kriya shema shel shachos, the night is over, it's now morning, time to daven shachos, it's time to read kriya shema, the morning kriya shema. We all know that's not Haggadah Shel Pesach. So he asks the question, how are we to understand that these Chachomim didn't know that it was time to say Kriya Shema? Kriya Shema is a big thing, a big mitzvah. And they're sitting around, and they're so distracted that they forget to say Kriya Shema in time, that it's time to say Kriya Shema. He can't deal with it. Finds that to be a question. I personally think the question is even made even more difficult by what we know of some of the people sitting around the table who forgot that it was time to say Kriya Shema. One of them was Rabbi Akiva. Right? We know Rabbi Akiva, in his dying moments, when he was put to death, said, I'm glad that I'm being put to death at this moment. I'll be able to say Shema Yisroel, alright, B'chol Nafshecha, I'm being Mosa Nefesh, because all my life I said, Mosa Yavo Liyodai V'Akaimeno. When will I have the opportunity to literally fulfill B'chol Nafshecha? So Rabbi Akiva himself is testifying on himself that all of his life he looked forward to the moment of saying Kriya Shema. And here he is, the night of Pesach, and he forgot that Kriya Shema is coming up. How do we understand that? So the Imre Shammai answers very interestingly. And this is a really sharp chap, but it's beautiful. He says, how do you know that it's Kriya Shema? It's Man Kriya Shema. In those days, no alarm clocks. When it begins to get light, you're sitting in the dark, begins to get light, you know, Higia Zman Kriya Shema Shel Shachas. However, when these Tanoim were sitting together, Rabbi Eliezer, Tarfon, Shur, Akiva, they lit up the room. Their faces lit up the room. They were so full of simcha that their faces were aglow. Their faces were aglow. They thought when the light of dawn began to come in that this is just the light that they had all night. In case you think that this is already too Hasidish, you know, their faces lit up the room. So he quotes a chazal from Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer. It's a medrash, Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer. And the Medrash says about Rabbi Eliezer, who was one of the people who were there on the table that night, listen to this, nothing to do with Pesach, nothing to do with the Seder, you see it in Mitzrayim, just having to do with Rabbi Eliezer. For Hoya Rabbi Eliezer Yoshev V'Doresh, that when Rabbi Eliezer would sit and give a drosha, Uponov Me'iros Ka'or HaChama, and his face shone like the light of the sun. So this is not just a metaphor. His life is, but rather, Chazal is saying, "Ponov meiros ka'or ha'chamo." Continuing, "Ve'ein adam yodeya im yom v'im laila," and nobody knew if it was day or night. So the Sefer Imrei Shammai says, from this medrash you see beautifully why they couldn't know when it was dawn, when it was the Giyat Mas Kriyash Mashal Shachris. Rabbi Eliezer was among them. He was Yoshe V'Doyresh. And when he did that, and we assume the same thing was true of the other Tanoim, Ponov Meiros Kor Hachama, Ve'ein Adam Yodeya Im Yom V'im Laila. I'd like to conclude with another Ritva that I came across in looking at the Ritva this year. And this is something which is really a yesod, and it's a yesod, a fundamental thought that it's good for all of us to think about in our own personal lives. We read in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, we will read, "V'etein li Yitzchak es Yaakov v'es Esav." Alright. So we're describing how God did, he did wonderful things for Yitzchak. What did he do for Yitzchak? He gave him Yaakov and Esav. And we're so happy that he gave Yitzchak Yaakov and Esav, right? For Etem Yitzchak is Yaakov vs. Esav. So Ritva asked the question, why are we so happy that he gave God Esav, that God gave Yitzchak Esav? If we would just say, for Etem Yitzchak is Yaakov, forgetting about Esav, well, why is he mentioned as Yaakov vs. Esav? I saw numerous approaches to this. But the Ritva, again, a Rishon, right to the point. He says, the blessing that we know that there were twins, that Rivka carried twins, and these twins were Yitzchak and Esav, is to show you that, in modern day language, that the same genetic structure, the same DNA, the same child-rearing practices, etc., can eventuate, can result in two different people, Yaakov and Esav. A person should never think, I can't be a great tzaddik because after all, it's not in my genes, it's not in my blood, I didn't see it in my parents' home, etc., etc. Because Esav HaRosha had the same child-rearing, the same cradle, the same, his mother read the same Dr. Spock book, etc., etc. He had the same diet. Esav chose to go one way and Yaakov chose to go the other way. And similarly, a person can't say, well, I battled in my genes and therefore I can sit back and relax and everything's going to be fine. Because if you do that, you can slip into being an Esav. So there's a bracha, writes the Ritva, a special bracha in V'etein liYitzchak as Yaakov as Esav, to show you there can be two identical twins who have the same mental equipment, physical equipment, etc., etc. They grow up in the same society. The choice is yours. If you want to, you can take all of that and make yourself into a Yaakov. If you don't, you can make yourself into an Esav. That ultimate lesson is implicit in that special bracha that Yitzchak had a Yaakov and an Esav. I click to close at this point, again thanking all of you for coming tonight, thanking my nephews for giving me the occasion to darshan a little bit. We rarely have such occasions. And to each and every one of you, a chag kosher v'sameach, with an emphasis on the word sameach.